We speak different languages, we come from different cultures, but here we are, studying Australia.
Welcome to today's episode. I'm your host, Felicity. First of all, I would like to apologize because I have been busy with my assignments, so I wasn't able to upload episodes as normal. But now I've finished all my assignments, and I hope I can resume as normal. Now, today I would like to let you guys listen to the interview I did with Faisal about working in Australia as an international student.
Welcome to today's episode. I'm your host, Felicity. So it's quite an experience to be an international student in Australia, and so it would be very helpful if you can find a job outside of your study hours. And by the way, if you spend too much time on your job and fail to meet your course attendance, you are actually breaching your visa conditions. So without further ado, let's invite Faisal from India to talk about his experience working in Australia while being an international student. Hello, Faisal. And what should I call you?
Oh, well, good question. I am known by a lot of names for people in different workplaces, but I guess I've known you for a very long time now in Australia, so I guess Faisal seems good for me, yeah.
Yeah, I see. I remember I can see your name is like a very long list of names.
Yes.
I remember seeing your name on Facebook. I'm like, how many names do you have?
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, it's difficult. You know, I can never get through airport security from those automatic gates. I am always pulled aside. And then I have to talk to the person, the immigration officer, and only then can I get through. It's embarrassing. Every time I try to go from those gates, it's impossible. Yeah.
Oh, no. I don't have any problem.
Yeah, well, lucky you.
Yeah, because I have like one legal name and one English name. That's it.
Like, I wish I had small names. But, I mean, it's fun, you know, like, people know me by different names, so sometimes, you know, it could be three different people as well.
Yeah, they could be like thinking about different people and then
exactly.
Didn't realize they're actually talking about the same person.
Yeah.
Okay, so what kind of job experience do you have in Australia?
Quite a few, actually. So I've had one, my longest experience would be at a casual job. I've been working for a retail company in Canberra, which is Australian-owned, is one of the oldest retail companies, actually, in Australia. And it just so happened that when I moved to Australia, I really wanted to get a job, and it was so that I could keep myself busy beyond the university. And I was walking around handing out my CVs, just, you know, like as if I was handing out some brochures or something. And I was, you know, they say I was in the right store at the right time, and they had not advertised for a job, and I went there, gave my CV, and landed my first job in Australia in a casual clothing store. Never thought I would ever do a job over there, and I've been there since October 2018.
Oh, wow.
So that was my first job over here, and continuing job over here, actually. I've had a lot of, well, I wouldn't say job experiences, but I've done a lot of volunteering roles. Mm-hmm. While I've been in Australia, the first one would be the Floria Festival in 2019. That was my first exposure to volunteering with a public organization.
Mm-hmm.
Great experience. You know, got to meet people from different backgrounds, a lot of university students over there. Floria as a festival is really, really beautiful, very colorful. Because of Floria, then I worked with a few other public festivals organized by the ACD government. I even participated in a cycling festival, which is organized by Tour de France, which is like the Australian version of Tour de France, which is called L'Étape Australia. I was volunteering for that in a place called Jindabyne, and I was up in the mountains for this bike race, freezing cold. I don't know how people were biking over there. As a volunteer, I was freezing, but it was fun. It was quite the experience that I had. And then I did an internship. Actually, I'm running through all of this, but just, you know, I had this internship this year in the month of March is when I started that. I was working as a, well, my title was a water policy intern, but my job was, I was working on this business development project for this consultancy firm in Canberra who wanted to expand their business into the Pacific Island nations. So the job given to me was I had to first do a market research and then come up with a strategy of how they can, you know, choose what countries to go to and how they can start their business in those countries. So that was my internship and sort of, so to say, my first formal work experience. And since October this year, I've been working full time for another Canberra-based company, which was a family-owned business and is now expanding into a network in Australia.
Oh, wow.
So, I'm doing business development with them, but it's more formal, more hands-on, and less of, you know, research and office-based work. So, I'm out on the field. I'm meeting people from, you know, government departments, embassies, government, both federal and state, private companies. So, yeah. That's my, like, proper formal job that I'm in now. So quite a few jobs, you know, been juggling around.
Yeah, so you just talk about a lot of job experience you actually have in Australia. So you tell us how you find a job of the casual one. So how do you find the others one, like the volunteers one?
Well, the volunteering jobs were just, you know, if you, like, I was actually looking for something to do during my holidays, and I googled, you know, volunteering jobs, and, you know, the way things are in Australia, especially in Canberra is a very, you know, very close-knit and a very small city. So, and it was just available if you look on ACT government's website. It's called Volunteering ACT, if I'm not wrong, and, you know, you've got N number of volunteering jobs. You know, you could even get jobs, volunteering jobs in the fields you're interested in, like, you know, say psychology, or, you know, maybe even admin roles. Volunteer nonetheless, but you can find roles in the field of your interest.
I remember checking out that website as well. I remember they have like a range of different jobs, like treasurer or media officer, admin, like even gardening job as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember, obviously this year they haven't done all of that, but in the last 2 years, they've, you know, they used to have these expos.
Oh yeah, the volunteering expo.
Jobs. Yeah, so you could just, you know, like any graduate job expo, there used to be volunteering job expos as well, which is new for me. I've never seen that before ever.
Yeah, I remember there was like a Canberra expo, and there was also one in the AAU. There was
I don't remember what the AAU, but yeah, I remember going for the one that the ACT government had organized. I think it was probably the Southern Cross Club, maybe. I don't remember. Yeah, but yeah, heaps of opportunities for volunteering. Well, I mean, I haven't seen much in 2020, obviously, because how the year has unfolded, but otherwise, you know, heaps of opportunities in volunteering.
I know on SEEK, you not only can find like actual paid jobs, they also have a section called SEEK volunteering, so you can find volunteer on that one as well. But but that's a different recruitment policy. Like, you need to send a text to them first, say you're interesting, and then they will send you like a further requirement. Like, for example, do you have any relevant experience, that kind of thing. So you need to send like a
Are more with the formal organization that
because
I know, like, for example, Red Cross and Amnesty, although they're volunteering jobs, they do a thorough check of, you know, your profile and how you fit with the role they have.
Yeah, but I think some of the volunteer jobs sound like very, you know, like a highlight you can put on your CV. Yeah. Like, for example, you are the media officer for this organization, then sure, put it on your CV. Like, this is the highlight.
Yeah, 100%. And I think a volunteering job, although, you know, it may seem like it's just free work, but you are actually developing a lot of and enhancing a lot of the skills you have and acquiring new skills over there. And, you know, because you're not being paid, it's a lot more relaxed. So you pick up things a lot better is what I think, you know. And because, you know, when you're in the formal workplace, there's, you know, there are certain targets you have to achieve. So, you know, you're under that stress as well. But, I mean, having said that, it's not that volunteering jobs, there's no stress in it. But it's more relaxed, and, you know, you also enjoy doing the volunteering work. And it's very rewarding personally.
Yeah, I feel like I improved a lot of my skills on doing volunteering. Because I did have a lot of volunteerings as well, like the one in our residential hall and outside of campus.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing you learn as a volunteer is patience. You know, when you have to deal with people from different cultural backgrounds, language backgrounds, there's a lot of patience that you develop, and which is very, very important in formal workplaces.
Oh, I think not just patience and also like resilience and...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because you always... Because like sometimes you will get that difficult customers or, you know, asking that tricky questions, which is... and then you were like, oh, what should I do?
Exactly,
yeah. Yeah, alright. So we talk about what you can gain from volunteering. So let's talk about your internship. Like, how did you find that intern, and what did you think that you gained from that one?
So, at the ANU, the College of Business and Economics, the CBE, does something called the CBE Internship Program.
Oh, yeah.
And it's for both undergraduates and postgraduates. And, you know, you can choose internships that are made available through the CBE. There's a team that, you know, sets up all of these internships with their partner companies and organizations. Yep. And then you can apply for those internships. The other alternative is that if you find an internship in some other, you know, in some company, you could get in touch with CBE and, you know, they can give you credits for doing an internship with them. Although there's an academic quotient as well where, you know, you have to submit reflections of your internship work. And then you have an academic supervisor and a workplace supervisor. So there's a lot of back and forth with uni and your workplace. My internship, interestingly, so I was looking for an internship wherein I could work for a policy firm in the field of anything related to sustainability or, basically anything that had to do with environmental issues. And I came across a company which, although at that point was not hiring, but amusingly, when the CBE internship program came up, that company was looking for interns. And I said, you know what, I'm going to apply for this. I may not get selected, but I want to apply for this. And they had, you know, we had to submit a cover letter and upload our resume and, well, you know, the basic standard of applying for any job. And then I applied, and I got shortlisted for two internships. I think I applied for three, maybe. Yeah, and I got shortlisted for two.
Oh, wow.
And this is what happened. So I did my first interview which was with the department in the university, and that was a very good interview. You know, I walked out of the interview, I was like, oh, I'm gonna get this for sure. And then I do my second interview, which was over the phone, and it was, oh my god, it was probably one of the worst job interviews I've ever had. And I remember scribbling on a piece of paper, I had printed this job description for my phone call so that I know what my job role is gonna be. So I scribbled on that page saying, I am not going to get this job. Funnily, I got that internship and not the internship I was confident about.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, well, well, that's how things are. And but I was happy nonetheless that I got this internship with this company, the water policy internship. So yeah, it was because of the CBE internship program. And so, you know, the advantage was that, you know, I could work for this formal organization and also get credits towards my elective courses that I was doing. So it sort of worked out pretty well for me.
Oh, wow. So the mean you had to pay for that internship because you
credit
for that?
Well, not for the internship, for the course I was doing, because I had an academic supervisor, which was from the university.
Yeah.
So you know, that's the, well, you can do the CBD internship program, but you pay for that. But some internships also, you know, give you a stipend. So
right.
It, you know, sort of balances what you pay for the course and then what you get. Although, you know, sometimes some internships you don't get paid at all, but, you know, that's an internship, so... It all depends on what company, what kind of job role you're in.
Yeah, it just reminds me, like, some of my friends are in different majors and they are required to have some internship or volunteering. And they also need to pay for that one because that is like a course there. So they need to have a supervisor, they need to, you know, pay the course
yeah.
fee and write a reflection, that kind of things.
Yeah, so that's exactly how the CBE internship program works. And I think what we're paying for is, you know, the university services that we're making use of and also the academic supervisor.
Yeah.
Because the academic supervisor is somebody from the university.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we have workshops that we do, you know, so workshops are conducted by the CBE careers team. And then, you know, we have guest lecturers coming in. We have people from the industry who come and give, you know, share their experiences. I guess, you know, maybe that's why.
Yeah, I think the CBE arranged a lot of work experience activities for students. Like they have that CBE careers right now, I think. They help you with resume, cover letter, and even interview.
Yeah.
And they also organize Yep.
Yeah, go ahead.
They also organize like the industry visit or industry meeting and they also have industry workshop as well, which is, I'm very jealous for that one.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not really sure if this is true for every other school at ANU, but I've heard from my friends who had, you know, I won't name the schools, but, you know, some of the other schools, they've said that, you know, CBE careers has been, well, proactively in responsive and supportive of, you know, things like CV or resume building or job hunting, or maybe because it's a business school and hence, you know, the careers team is more proactive. I don't know. But, I mean, I personally have had a very good experience with the CBE careers team, and I've spoken to a lot of my fellow CBE alumni, and, you know, even they say the same, that they've had good experiences with. And, you know, you rightly said that, you know, we have a lot of workshops and programs and industry seminars from, you know, experts from the industry. But I'm not really sure why it's more for the CBE students and, you know, not as much for the other schools, though. But, I mean, I would say, though, that Crawford also has a very good internship program. In fact, with Crawford, you know, there's even more opportunities, especially in the policy domain and working with think tanks in Australia. But I'm not really sure of what happens in the other schools.
I did go to some of the workshop that the ANU, what's it called, Career and Development Department. So they have some workshop for you to help you with the cover letter and CV, that kind of thing. But that's like a general workshop. So you go there with a bunch of people. But later on, I noticed that, so they do, so normally they will have like an appointment for you to go there to have a one-on-one to talk about like your interview skills or, you know, resume, whatever related to your recruitment process. But later on, I noticed that they all moved to the under the CBE careers, which is very annoying. Like, I was trying to find, like, you know, is there any other section for people outside the CBE, but I can't find any, which is why.
Right.
That's very annoying.
Maybe it's the, you know, how schools are structured. I don't really know why there's this disparity, though.
I don't know, but it's very annoying, and I'm also very jealous of the CBE students.
Well, you know, you could send in a feedback to the university, and they could probably take this up with the individual schools then.
I don't know. I mean, I think that is under a different department, because they have like student career and development department. That's the office that managed this issue.
Right.
Because I think they will hire like people with a lot of experience. Like, you know, these people have been working in this place, that place for a long time. They have a lot of experience. That's how they are qualified for that career mentor position.
Right. I mean, you know, personally, I also think that, you know, students should also, you know, if a student genuinely has, you know, that dedication and commitment to working on, you know, say, for example, the CV and resume, I'm sure the university will support them, because I've seen this at CBE as well. So, I mean, I'm also, you know, at CBE, you know, we have that career service available, but a lot of students don't really use that to their best or fullest of advantages. And even from the CBE career counselors that I've spoken to, you know, they say that, you know, it's very important for the students to keep following up and, you know, constantly keeping track of, you know, progress of what they're doing and checking with the career advisors as well. Because, you know, it's not a one-off thing. You can't just have your resume checked and up and ready in one meeting. It's like a constant and a progressive development process. So you have to, you know, it's a lot of back and forth. You have to, you know, rework on your resume, get in touch with the person at CBE Careers, then go back and do it again. And you have to keep doing a lot of back and forth. And that's how you will see a result.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I know this service was because I like to, like, you know, staring at the university website for different interesting things. That's how I find out all this information. But yeah, a lot of students around me, I don't think they know this service.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, ANU have those, like, pre-interview recording things for you. So you can record, yeah, pretend that you are having interview, record them, and they will have, like, an officer check that interview for you and give you some feedback for that one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm just reiterating what I said, you know, that, you know, if students, people who are genuinely interested, you know, if you look for it, you'll find things.
Yeah, like
a lot of people, you know, a lot of people end up complaining about a lot of things, and, you know, don't proactively do anything to find a solution for the problems they have. So I guess that's the bigger issue of, you know, people complaining more and putting in less efforts to finding solutions. And you know, I'm not saying that everybody complains. A lot of people put in a lot of effort and a lot of hard work, but, you know, patience. Like I said, you have to be resilient. You will find something and you will get a solution for whatever problem you have, say, you know, with say, for example, careers. But you have to be extremely resilient and patient for that.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, you never know with COVID, when's the next time you can get a job interview?
Oh, you know, the job that I have right now was, yeah, actually because of, I was, you know, doing a lot of back and forth with this career counselor at CBE. Mm-hmm. To the point where I sort of started feeling that, you know, maybe I think I'm annoying this person, but, you know, well, it was because, you know, I was doing it very regularly, so, you know, I was tailoring my CV on a weekly basis.
Oh,
so, you know,
wow.
I was removing things, I was adding things, and one day I got an email from my career counselor saying that, hey, you know, this job has been posted on CBE Careers and it has been there for quite some time, and I think you might be a good fit. And I was like, well, okay, you know, I'll take it up. And then I sent my CV to the company, and then I had a video interview, and then I had two more interviews, and then after a month long session of, you know, one interview every alternate week or so, then I landed this job. But it was because I was, you know, my career counselor knew my CV, and he and the career counselor also knew who I was. So, you know, they were like, you know, you could fit in well. And that's how I got this job. Had I not done that, I would, maybe would not have gotten this job at all.
Well, that's very good. I mean, I guess that makes sense because they are probably the one that posts that position on the website.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very good. I mean, wow.
And this is the reason why I say that, you know, it's a back and forth process, because it's like this, you know, if I don't talk to the person who is posting a job, that person A won't know who I am and would not recommend anything to me. And, you know, if I want to get, and, you know, like I said, the person, you know, my career counselor said that, because I have seen your CV and I have interacted with you X number of times, that's the reason I thought you would fit in well into this job role. And it's not a job. And so before, you know, I should have mentioned this at the start. So I did my master's in project management, and my current job role is in business development. They're very, you know, very different job roles that I am in, as opposed to what I did academically, but there's room for growth and, you know, advancing into something related to my field. And hence I was recommended to this job, and, you know, I was suggested that maybe I should consider this job. And it was only after I did that, and now, you know, when I think about it, I was like, yeah, it was a good decision, you know, because there is room for me to grow into, you know, advance into a lot of other things. And eventually, I will get to use my academic knowledge into my full-time, my formal job.
I think that's very good. Like, that's like, so that's like a dream job for you. Like, yeah, even,
well, I mean,
like,
if you have to be melodramatic about it, yeah, it's a dream job. But I never thought I'd be doing this, ever. You know? If you tell me, if I were to think about, if you came up to me in 2018 and told, oh, you'd be working in a business as a business development executive, and I'd be like, nah, why would I do that? You
know? I mean, I wouldn't, if you look at my career and my study experience, they are really not related at all.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of it, you know, you could study something, but the skills that you develop are extremely transferable, and you never know where what could come into use. Like, but as a profession, my undergrad was in architecture. I did a master's in project management, and here I'm doing business development. But, you know, when I think about it in terms of, you know, where I could be 5 years from now, I could be using all of everything from architecture and project management in the future with my job.
That's very good. I don't think, I'm just thinking, like, I study English education in undergrad, English education and history, and history in master. I'm doing a completely different job, and now the only thing that's related to my career will probably be this podcast, because it's a little bit related to international student history.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a little bit related to, you know, our history and international student history, that kind of things, but right. That's not really my job.
Well, I don't think, well, I mean, you know, there are people who are very, you know, determined to, like, a lot of my friends who studied architecture in the undergrad did a master's in architecture and, pardon me, are now doing, you know, are practicing architects, so, which is fine, but there are people who, you know, use an indirect approach when it comes to work. They can study a particular degree, but they end up working in a different industry, which eventuates into what they did academically. You know, just to put it out there, and I've told this to you before as well, I'm pretty sure, you know, when we were at Rashula Hall, I want to do a PhD in anthropology. I mean, if I go and tell somebody as an architect and a project manager, I want to, you know, eventually do a PhD in anthropology, nobody would really take me seriously. They'd be like, oh, this guy's stupid. He's just running around everywhere. But that's because, you know, I have, you know, interest in that field, but that doesn't mean that I do not want to do anything else. Those are my academic interests, and everybody is different, you know. I have, like, I keep jumping around, you know. One day I'll get up and I'm like, oh, I should be a pilot maybe, you know. It's just, you know, it's all right, I guess. Some people are very determined. I want to do a little of everything.
Yeah, me too. Like, I mean, look at me. I study different majors at different stages and I'm doing different things and I'll keep jumping around because my interests sort of vary. And now I'm doing this podcast, listening to people talking about different stories.
Oh, I mean, you know, doing interviews is fun. You learn a lot about, you know, from people, about, you know, different professions and about yourself as well when you're doing all of these things. So I don't think you're doing anything wrong or, you know, anything incorrect. I think you're doing great.
Thank you. Oh, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess because I actually started this podcast as like a self-development project to keep myself from being insane during the COVID.
Yeah.
And now Canberra is doing good at the moment, but I'm still doing this one because I felt like it's sort of like my interest reflection. Like, I always keep my interest, keep my options open. I don't, you know, just focus on one thing. And I can, and on my podcast, because this is my podcast, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know, I feel like sometimes when I look at those people, I mean, I understand some people are very determined. They know what they're doing from the moment they went to school. They know what they want to study. I feel like I'm always determined of where my interest will be on the next point. I can't really, you know, put myself on this project for a long, long time. I can't do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, see, well, you are determined. It's just that you're determined for, you know, a short span of time for, you know, for things. you're determined to do an X thing for a few months and then you jump on to something else. And I guess it all depends on individualistic expectations and targets and goals. Some people are, you know, hell-bent on doing just one thing for the rest of their life, which is fine, you know. It's everybody's different.
Yeah, that reminds me, like, you know, in Australia there are different types of job. Like,
yeah,
the best one, like, I suppose, like the one with the best benefit and everything would be the permanent jobs. And they also like temporary jobs and casual job as well. So you have the casual jobs and you also have your current permanent jobs. What do you think of this difference between these two jobs?
Well, the casual job is, you know, speaking from what my casual job is not in a, in an industry that I associate myself with.
Yeah.
So the casual job is more so like, more of, you know, just a way, well, was a way of keeping myself occupied.
Yeah.
But, you know, even in, like, in big organizations, including government, you know, you have casual jobs. So it's just that you don't have, you know, the surety and the comfort of knowing that you will have fixed or scheduled hours in the days and the months to come. Because with casual, it's like, you know, next morning you could be called and said, hey, you know, we don't, you know, your role is redundant now. And,
yeah.
Bye-bye. But with a permanent job, it's a little, I mean, they can do that there as well, but it's slightly more different. You know, there's some formal ways of doing it and stuff. So with casual jobs, it depends on what industry you're working in. I mean, like, you could be working for a government as a casual employee.
Yeah.
Although you're working in a formal work environment, but it's casual, which means that, you know, a few days from today, they could say that, oh, we don't need this role anymore. So, bye-bye. So there's no security in terms of jobs as a casual worker. Well, and when I say that, what I mean is that, you know, it's not a formal agreement. And, you know, a lot of, and you will come across this way, what the definition of a casual job would be, that your job role could be made redundant any day. So, you know, you don't get the benefits of being a permanent employee for any organization.
Yeah, I was on a casual contract before. I was actually a bit worried because I was on the casual, even though it's a contract one.
Yeah.
So I was a bit worried, you know, maybe one day they will say, oh, we don't need you anymore.
Exactly. Like, bye. So that, I think that's one of the biggest differences between a casual and a permanent job. I'm pretty sure I've seen some permanent casual job roles as well. Wonder how they work.
I know there are some like permanent part-time and permanent full-time. And there are some people who, you know, voluntary to do the part-time instead of the full-time. Because they will have like carer's duties or, you know, whatever they have.
Well, the difference is only of, you know, one day of work. Like part-time work is about 28 or 30 hours. And full-time work is
35, I think.
Yeah, roughly. So it's basically, you know, just like half or a little over half a day's work difference. That's it. But, you know, you do get that extra day, work day or a weekday for yourself.
And also thinking, like, have you looked at some of the, for example, university contract or that kind of things? Like, I noticed that sometimes when it comes to like the seniors positions, like for example in our residential hall, the head of hall is actually I think it was a casual contract or a part-time contract, but it's definitely not a full-time one.
Oh no, I do not have any knowledge of that, no.
Yeah, because that was very interesting because I was just applying jobs anywhere and I saw like, why is the head of hall of a part-time when the deputy head of hall is a full-time?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a quite interesting question because I'm like, surely as a, you know, the head, you're supposed to be there. You're supposed to represent the building. But then because you're not at a full-time, so that means you're not there all the time. Then the deputy one is actually the one taking most of the jobs. It's quite interesting,
isn't it?
I don't
really know how that works, though.
Yeah, I mean, think about our university. Like, the person who's actually in charge are actually the vice chancellor, not the chancellor.
Yeah.
Because our chancellor is actually an honorary position, so they probably only come here during the ceremony.
Yeah.
Which is quite interesting, isn't it? Like, the top person are actually not there all the time.
Yeah, well, I haven't done much of investigation into why it is so, but it's also because, you know, I was so caught up with, oh, I'm at university, I just have to study. So maybe now that, you know, I have a little more free time for myself, maybe I might actually do some investigation as to why it is so.
Oh, yeah, that reminds me. Because we all know, as an international student, you can only work 20 hours per week.
Yeah.
So how do you balance the time between your work and study?
How do I answer this question?
Like, how do you balance your study time and your work time and your relaxing time?
Because the nature of my work was such that it wasn't really... it wouldn't consume too much of my energy. I was just enjoying it. When it came to study, you know, this will be a very textbook sort of way of saying it, but I mean, when it was time for study, I would study, and when it was time for work, I would work. And also the fact that I was living on campus meant that I also had quite an active community life. So it was just being taken care of very organically. I wasn't really thinking of, oh, okay, now I'm working or now I'm studying or now I have to be with the community. No, it was just everything was happening organically, and maybe that was influenced by the fact that I was living on campus. I did live off campus at the start of my study, but that was only for maybe 3 months, but that's about it. And that was when I had just moved to Australia, so, you know, I was just settling in and everything. The first semester just was a blur. It just went real quick. But after that, everything was just happening very organically for me.
Yeah, I remember every time I saw you, like, during the weekdays, mm-hmm. at night, you always like, oh, I just came back from work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, see, like I said, you know, I was doing that work because I you know, I do not like sitting idle. It's just, it makes me go crazy. I should either be, you know, well, yeah, obviously there are days when I'm relaxing. Okay, I won't touch my phone, nothing, not look at my laptop, nothing. But the days when I'm not doing that, I want to keep myself busy, you know, doing anything, you know, volunteering job or like helping out, you know, in, the community life or my casual, like my casual job that I was doing. So, yeah.
Also, like, it was very hard for me to try to find a job that allows me to work for 20 hours per week. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you manage to do that? Like, because it's very hard. Like, most of the casual jobs, they would say, oh, we need you to work like 21 hours or probably coming, you know, 4 days a week, which is a bit difficult for us to do as an international student.
Yeah, I mean, see, that's just me, you know. It again, it all is, it all depends on who you work for, what industry you're working in, and sometimes it's beyond anybody's control. You know, if say a specific industry needs a casual worker for 21 hours, then well, they need it for 21 hours. Maybe, you know, the manager might say, oh, you know, I might be able to make some exceptions, but I guess, again, you know, it's all extremely, extremely dependent on where you work, who you work for, who is your manager. And and even on you know, how you work as well. You know, if your manager is, you know, if you get along well with your co-workers and your manager, maybe they might make some exceptions for you. So, you know, even as a casual worker, even you should be putting in your bit of effort of, you know, cultivating that trust and that relationship with your fellow workers.
I guess it all depends on whether the employee actually wants you as the employee.
True. Yeah, that obviously. That too, yes.
Yeah, because I remember there was this one time I saw a librarian part-time position on campus. Mm-hmm. And the requirements is you have to work for 21 hours per week. Like, not 1 hour more, not 1 hour less, but 21 hours.
Yeah.
And I emailed them saying, hey, Is it possible to, like, you know, just reduce 1 hour? And I say, no, you have to come 4 days, 4 days a week. Yeah, I think 4 days a week for 7 hours a day. And you have to work for 21 hours per week. I'm like, how am I going to work if I, you know, if I have to study and that is breaching my visa conditions? Like, that's impossible for me as an international student to apply for that one.
Well, it's unfortunate, you know, but I guess, you know, every organization gets, well, can decide if, and maybe it's, you know, it's even their requirement that they need somebody during those operational hours, and, you know, they cannot split the hours between two people.
I also have a question, like, because this was very difficult for international students to find a job that, you know, comply with the visa policy for the 20 hours per week. So a lot of international students would go to retail to be like, you know, a cafe worker or restaurant waitress, that kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think like it is possible for international student to get a job outside of retail?
Oh yeah, 100%. And actually, I did want to make a point. So it's not 20 hours a week. It's 40 hours a fortnight.
Yes.
So, you know, they could split it as 10 hours in 1 week and 30 hours in the week that follows. So, you know, they could shuffle the hours.
Yeah.
As long as they don't breach the 40 hours for the fortnight.
Yeah.
Speaking about jobs for international students, I guess it's it's very convenient and easy for people to get jobs in the retail or hospitality sector, because there was ample amount of opportunity pre-COVID in all those industries. But, you know, I've met people who've also found jobs as marketing assistants or
oh wow
I guess there was somebody I know who was. Oh yeah, I mean actually, yeah. Now I know some people who were working as analysts for some renewable energy companies in Canberra. So you know, like I said, you know, it depends on what industry you come from and what skills you have, and definitely you can find a job then. You've got 100%. You have to put in a lot of effort. But yeah, you can get jobs beyond just retail and hospitality for sure. It's more common for students to do or find jobs in those sectors because they're very easy. You know, you don't need a very special, you know, like a computer skill or academic background for doing those jobs, as compared to, you know, if you have to work, say, for a renewable energy company, you know, you would need certain an understanding of certain, say, maybe softwares or how the engineering side of things work.
It's actually not that easy, like working at a retail, like they will have like,
oh yeah, no, 100%. When I say that you don't need special skills, I don't mean that, you know, any easy, but what I mean is that, you know, in the retail and hospitality sectors, you can, you know, grasp the skills quick, but with working for formal organizations, say for example in the engineering field, you know, they would expect you to have an understanding of certain things before you actually do it.
Yeah, I also think like the more complexity your job gets, the more training you will get. Like, you know, for example,
Let me rephrase the entire answer. It's because some jobs are complicated, and that's what I mean, that you need understanding of certain softwares and the engineering skills that you need for certain jobs, because you can't just do them. You can't just wake up one day and be like, oh, I want to work on a solar energy farm, planning a solar field or something. Because, you know, I mean, you can't just do that. You would have to understand how things work within a solar panel and how you design a solar farm, the technology that goes behind it. There's a lot of hardware and software that goes behind it.
Right. Also, I'm just thinking, like, a lot of students around me, they will go take some jobs in restaurants and cafe, and they usually work like very hard and very tired there, and and when they come back to study, they will have less time of studying. So do you have any advice for, you know, what you should do on the first semester in terms of finding a job, or should I just...
My answer would be that it doesn't apply to any semester in particular. I would say be extremely wise and practical and mindful of what job you're doing and the repercussions or impact it would have on your day-to-day life as a student. So there's not one specific advice that I can give. It's just that, you know, you should know beforehand that the job you're going to do is going to be, you know, physically demanding to whatever extent it will be, and you should know how much you can do, and then, you know, think about how it would impact your study. So it all depends on how you are able to balance the energy being spent at work and at study. And like a lot of people I know, you know, and then it also comes down to what circumstances you're in. Maybe you really need to work hard and, you know, there's no other job available, so you have to do whatever's available and also manage the study. So it comes to how you can, as an individual, manage your academics and your casual or part-time work. But I would definitely suggest that, you know, when as a student, maybe try to find volunteering or casual, any sort of job, because, you know, it helps you, as an international student, helps you acclimatize to local culture, the local lingo, and the norms of the society and how people talk, and, you know, what's the work culture and just day-to-day life, you know, you can get yourself a first-hand understanding of everything instead of, you know, being locked in your apartment or studio or living on campus for 2 years. You study and directly you're thrown into a work environment and you have no idea of how people talk. You have no idea how work is done or, you know, how the work culture is. And then more often, because of your casual job and the people you meet at your casual job, you might end up finding a full-time job in the field you're interested in because of somebody you met through the casual job. So it's like, you know, it's like a foot in the door policy. You find a pathway through the job into a career that you are aspiring to get for yourself, to have for yourself.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes some of the international students, they're rushing to, you know, earn money and get kind of stuff,
yeah.
And they forgot they actually, you know, if they don't have a good result on their transcript, they might actually get deported because they're not complying the visa conditions.
So yeah, that's what I said, you know, people should first understand what is expected, you know, say talking about the visa conditions, you know, they should know what the conditions are and then look for jobs and, you know, and then balance the job and their study as well.
Yeah, and also, I think people should be more open-minded because you never know when's your next job going to be waiting for you.
True, that's what I said, you know, you never know. Maybe because of a casual job, maybe you work at a cafe and you say you're a student of law and then you're talking to a customer who happens to be working at a law firm and they are hiring and you're like, hey, you know, I'm interested. And maybe because they see that you're good with your interpersonal skills, you're good at communication. And they would be like, yeah, sure, you know, drop by my office and we'll, you know, take it forward from there. And you might get a job as, you know, working as a paralegal or something. And all happens because you spoke to a customer at the coffee shop you're working for. So, you know, like I said, you know, anything could lead to anywhere. I mean, both good and bad. So, you know, you should be able to, you know, you should have an eye for analyzing and identifying what's good for you and what's bad for you. And you know, and keep, and like you said, you know, keep your mind open and keep yourself open to possibilities.
Oh, also it reminds me, like, you know, coffee chat is quite popular as in networking.
Yes.
Australia. Have you any experience on that one?
Oh, so many. In fact, I meet for coffee chats with a lot of my former teachers at university.
Oh, wow.
Which is very interesting for me, you know, because, you know, at university, it's a very, well, not very, there's like an informal relationship between students and teachers where, you know, it is expected of you that you ask questions and, you know, you ask more questions, you shouldn't be hesitant. And when it moves to, I remember this was in semester 3, which was one of the best semesters at uni for me. One of my teachers, one of these courses I was doing, you know, was very, very interesting and interactive, and I remember catching up with my teacher beyond the class because I had some, you know, questions which were very specific to the project I was working on, and I was hesitant to meet, you know, I was like, oh, how would I talk to somebody beyond the formal class environment? But I realized that it was actually pretty easy, and it was actually and very helpful as well. And, you know, and that's where I realized that these networking skills start from university. You know, you talk to your fellow classmates, you talk to your fellow your teachers, and then when it moves to, say, in a more professional setting, that, you know, I meet people at work, and then, you know, sometimes we discuss work at these casual coffee catch-ups. And I guess moving away from the formal workplace, you know, you become more relaxed So I guess it's maybe more productive as well, maybe.
So have you had coffee chat outside, like outside your professors?
One teacher for sure I have had, and that was because, you know, it was, that course was, had a very, very good effect on me personally, and it, and that was reflected in my professional work as well. So, you know, it became more of a friendly conversation than just an academic conversation for me.
So have you, like, other than your professor, have you had coffee chat with, like, say, anyone in your workplace or?
Oh, yeah, yeah, 100%. In fact, even my career counselor from CBE, I just recently, maybe this was this, last week maybe, or maybe the week before last, I caught up with my career counselor, you know, just to touch base on, you know, how I'm progressing at my work and, you know, get feedback about certain things that, you know, certain questions I have in my mind and, you know, how I can change certain things at work. They're not specific to my job role. They're just very generic sort of discussions, but they're very helpful because, you know, I've constantly been in touch with this person through the process of getting the job and, you know, applying for a job and stuff. So they know what, you know, they sort of know what my weaknesses are. And, you know, and because I'm comfortable in discussing this with my career counselor, it's good to, you know, I touch base once a month just, you know, to see how I am doing at work. And it just, you know, it's good to just reflect upon work with somebody who is not from work. You know, you get a fresh perspective from somebody. And even people at work, I do that with, you know, fellow managers and other people at work, just to see, you know, how things, how the things that I am doing are, you know, are there any changes I should do? Are there any improvements, any feedback and suggestions? And they're really good, you know, because initially it seems a little weird because, you know, you're basically, you know, you're going to get either criticized for things that you're doing or you might get suggestions. But then when once that becomes a habit, it's actually a learning process for you then, you know. And it's always good to know the things that you're doing good so you can improve on them, and things that you're, you know, shorting fall on, you can, you know, change approaches or, you know, get feedback from senior, more learned people in the industry at your workplace or somebody from a different workplace but similar industry. So I guess getting, you know, doing those coffee catch-ups or just catching up with people and having the discussions and doing self-reflection as well is very important.
Oh, I'm so bad at self-reflection. Like,
well, had you, yeah, had you done the CBE internship program, you would have been doing a lot of self-reflection.
No, I haven't done that one, but I did the AAU Plus one, which is how do you call it? Like, so what, every time when you did 20 hours of volunteering, you need to do a reflection.
Yes, yes.
And then after, I think for postgraduate is 40 hours or 60 hours, and for undergraduate is 100 hours. So yeah, after the 60 hours, you get some, you know, some badges or even a certificate for you saying, oh, congratulations, you finished this one. And every time I'm struggling to, you know, write on the reflection. But I think it's good.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
it's a habit that you have to inculcate. It won't, you know, you may not like it initially, but in the long term, you'll realize that you are able to critique your own strategies and approaches and the way you do things, and nobody knows yourself better than you. You know, you can get as much feedback as you want from other people, but unless you yourself think and analyze what you're doing, and you know, and question what you're doing, you won't know how to improve things that you're, you know, maybe not doing so good in.
Yeah, I feel like in Australia, the culture here is so, like, you know, they're encouraging you to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no question is stupid question here. Like, you know, when you're going to a school, they will say, Okay, if you have any questions, you know, feel free to ask, or if you don't ask it during the course, you can still email me after the course. And in my workplace, we also have, so we have this one-on-one section for every 6 weeks. So you will have this section with your team leader, you know, to discuss how you were going in the past 6 weeks and how you want to, you know, improve your future work performance. So I feel like it's quite good for people here, like, you know, they're encouraging you to reflect on yourself, ask more questions, and I think this is very good.
Yeah, definitely, and I think, this is not just because I studied at the ANU, but at the ANU, you know, 100%, it's a research-based university.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and questioning, it's very important that you question, even questioning yourself.
Yeah, you know, the first time, every time when I email the professor, I'm always double checking whether I see, whether I type anything wrong. And there was this one time I asked my professor, who is the director of my major, and they're asking questions like, this is my first or second semester, am I doing this right, blah, blah, blah. And then he was like, well, we could have a face-to-face chat for this one if you like. And I'm like, oh wow, really, can I do that? And the next thing I know, I accidentally clicked something on the email address, and then on the email, and then it comes through like an appointment bookings, appointment invitation. I'm like, I'm not supposed to do that, I'm sorry, I did it wrong. And then my professor was like, oh, that's fine, although I can't work at that time, but I can schedule another time for you. And that was like, oh wow, because I never thought like a director would be, you know, making time for me on an appointment, even though it's probably just 15 minutes or half an hour.
Right.
Yeah, but that was quite interesting, because I never saw like, you know, director of the... so someone with that title will, you know, be willing to talk to me for like even just 15 minutes.
True. And you know, that's the good thing about it, you know, that you could approach anybody obviously you can get rejected and refused as well. You can ask for a coffee chat with somebody, but I mean, it's unlikely that they would do it unless they genuinely are unable to.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, because I sometimes when I was looking for jobs, I would see, you know, tips for finding a job, and they would say, you know, go to LinkedIn, you know, go ask people for coffee around, and who knows, maybe they will say, oh, I can recommend you for this job, and you can put my name on your referee or whatever. And
yeah,
it's very interesting. Like, it was like, oh wow, I can do that, I can't believe that.
So many times, I mean, a lot of these you know, gatherings of, like, for example, you know, in my profession of project management, there's a lot of professional bodies that I'm associated with as a student. And, you know, we have these, we used to have a lot of these conferences and gatherings, and, you know, you would talk to them and they'd be like, oh, you know, my company is looking for, you know, somebody to intern in something. Why don't you shoot me an email? And I'm like, oh, wow, okay, that sounds cool. So, and definitely people should, you know, look at getting or participating with associations or organizations of their academic field. And they are one of the best places to network with people and potentially find a job.
Yeah, I feel like there are actually a lot of ways to find a job in Australia. You don't just, you know, just apply online, sending your resume everywhere. There's also some other ways to find a job. Like, you never know. Maybe the customers before you might end up being your employer sometimes.
True, yeah. And study. It's very individualistic approach. Well, sorry, not individualistic approach. It's a very personal approach. Everybody manages things differently, so there's no one answer to that. Like, I know some people, because the way the course is structured, they cannot find any time for a casual job. And
right.
Like, I mean, I know people in my during my course at the university who did not do any casual work, and they would say, oh, you know, there's so much to do and stuff. And I would start questioning myself, okay, you know, like, are you studying, you know, are you doing enough? Maybe, you know, maybe you should focus more on the study. But like I said, you know, it's a very personal way of approaching these things. So there's no one set answer or one set way of managing these things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a bit, I was thinking studying was already too much for me. And yeah, so I'm like, oh, because I did have a lot of reading to do.
I think
we need to have 4 courses each semester, and then every course will have at least 20 pages of reading. I'm like,
oh, yes. Good that you mentioned that. I have a few things as a suggestion and a recommendation for everybody is that, you know, do those readings. I know it's extremely boring, but those readings are extremely beneficial because they help you interact more in class. And the more you talk in class, the more fun the learning becomes. And which leads me to my other point, which is a lot happens beyond university. A lot, you learn a lot more than you do during those, you know, 2 or 3 hours of a lecture. You learn a lot more beyond that. You know, interact with your fellow classmates, talk to them, not just social conversations, and you know, even about the subjects you're doing, the courses or the research work you're doing, and not just with people from the same academic background, but different backgrounds, because you never know, you might learn a different, or you might get a different perspective from different people. And keep yourself, like you rightly said, you know, keep yourself open to opportunities and possibilities. A lot happens, and I say that again, a lot happens beyond just the classroom.
Oh yeah, definitely. I remember I when I first came to Australia, you know, this is like completely unknown country to me. Went to a lot of the activities that the university organized, like, what do they have? Like English conversation groups, I think during the orientation, we do also have something like helping you writing an assignment, that kind of workshop. And yeah. I went there, and on the English conversation group, like, I remember the English conversation were quite interesting, because they ask you to, you know, ask you to be pairing with each other, and then you need to answer questions on these questions. And then every time, yeah. like, they ask you questions like, you know, like, what do you think you would do after the university, or, you know, what kind of job you think you could get if you quit your study now? And the other questions, like, I would never ask myself that kind of questions, because I'm always focused on the present. I don't usually look that further away on the future.
Yeah.
But I think it's very good to, like, you know, not just, you know, to take a different approach, but also to, like, sort of refresh your mind. Because I feel like sometimes you only study for too long, then your mind will just be like, you know, keeping down and down, but you need to have that sort of refreshment on your mind, just so you don't just sort of lift your spirit a little bit.
Yeah. I agree 100%. And like you said, you know, I don't want to always be talking to somebody who studied project management, because everybody's going to end up talking about the same thing.
Yeah. And then you'll be arguing with each other, like, oh, this is...
Yeah. Well, this was good. I mean, I hope I didn't, you know... I hope I answered all your questions properly and, did not deviate much from the question being asked. And, yeah, 100% would like to do another session, maybe more than one, if you had to, you know, collaborate with maybe somebody else and have a discussion about international experiences as well.
I haven't thought about it, but I did, because I think it's a bit difficult to manage to have, you know, more than one, two people on the interview.
Yeah.
Cause
oh, don't worry, I can help you with that. I've done podcasts before. I can definitely help you with that.
right, that's good.
In fact, I've done podcasts with 5 people.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yeah, and those were video podcasts. So, you know, I had like 5 cameras. I actually had a crew. I had 4 people working on script. I had some people working on video editing. I had 2 people doing sound and everything. Fun things. I could actually talk about the podcast itself, how I was doing those.
Oh, that would be fun.
Well, all the best, Felicity.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing tonight, and I wish you all the best in your current position.
Oh, thank you so much to you, too. I mean, it's good to talk about this. You know, now it's like now I can move on and discuss about something else.
You can go back to Travis. I saw your post on Instagram.
yeah. I think Travis has gone to sleep by now, maybe.
Oh,
or maybe just watching some TV show. I don't know. Anyway, you have a good night, and I'll catch up with you soon for coffee. Then let me know when.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. And all right. Have a good night. Bye.
You too. Bye. Good night.
All right, so that's all for today. So you're welcome to share your experience as an international student on our Facebook page, Twitter account, and WeChat official account, 徒儿留学记, and that's a wrap.